there we go. So thank you very much for agreeing to do an interview with me today, Ken. I'd like just to start off with how and when you got involved in social enterprise.
Well, before the term social enterprise was coined, really. Mm-hmm. So my background was primarily with a local authority, so former Grampian Regional Council. I was a community worker. And then became a senior community worker and eventually ended up as the council's assistant head of social strategy. You were talking a wee bit about kind of John Pierce stuff. Similar background in terms of rooted in poverty strategies, anti-poverty strategies, albeit a different context in terms of Grampian. I worked on a range of different initiatives at that time, in the early 90s, a senior education official brought to the attention of the unit, the social strategy unit, concerns about a former Urban Aid funded project, a central youth project, and the difficulties that the staff were encountering in dealing with the problems that were being presented. And that conversation was the start of what eventually became the FOI. The conversation wasn't about social enterprise, it was about addressing social and economic issues of young people presenting at a relatively small scale youth project in the centre of Aberdeen. But that started a discussion about the plight of young people within the broader area, began to focus in on issues around homelessness and unemployment. At that time, the FOI movement was being promoted by Shelter. So Shelter had established the FOI Federation as a separate organisation to help take forward this particular model that would link accommodation with support and opportunities for education, training and employment. So that was the early 90s, and word started to get out from the five projects that were piloted, and it seemed just to catch people's imagination. So soon those five pilot projects doubled, it grew like topsy. Mm-hmm. Particularly in England, Wales, less so in Scotland. But we liked the idea, the model in Grampian, and we took the ideas of the FOI movement and applied them to the issues that had been presented by this youth project, and started to look at a new initiative to address issues of youth unemployment, homelessness, through a FOI model that we would establish in Aberdeen, but would become a network across Grampian region. Mm-hmm. So the starting point for the FOI was local authority, that was where the impetus came from. I guess the aspect of it that was different was the whole embracing of a business philosophy around how the organisation should run, and the fact also that it should undertake commercial activities in its own right. So that was against a backcloth of community business ventures, some of which had been disaster, some of which had been relatively successful, small scale, but I guess an ethos of trying to look for different ways of addressing social issues through some kind of economic model. It had broad political support. the concept. Though there were issues, if you know at that time, the regional councils didn't have housing under their remit. They sat with the district council, so there was tensions in the model, and the proposal was to set a new organisation up that would be independent of the organisations, but would have participation from those organisations. So it kind of predates some of the outsourcing and arm's length bodies that you've seen in local authorities and other public bodies in more recent years. So it was constituted initially as a trust, and then once I was appointed as the chief exec, founding chief exec, I reconstituted it as a charitable company with a trading subsidiary. So we adopted very early on what's now a kind of tried and tested model.
Mm-hmm.
The term social enterprise didn't kind of enter into it. It was actually, I suppose, mission driven would be the phrase you'd use now.
Mm-hmm.
So it was about trying to tackle those issues in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
It was my boss, Dave Simmers, who kind of led it in the early days when it was going through the council and the kind of business planning process. I was involved in aspects of that, primarily the kind of funding elements of it, and then obviously was appointed to take on the role of they called it then the director, and the rest is history.
Great. So I'd like to explore a little bit more of that kind of contextual points that you mentioned. I mean, you know, unlike other areas and regions of Scotland, you know, I think the popular perception of, you know, Aberdeen in the 1980s and 90s is that this is a economically, you know, strong region, you know, with farming, the oil industry. What was the context of what was driving poverty in Grampian at that time, and what kinds of people were, falling through the gaps? And
The index of multiple deprivation applied in Grampian, just as it applies in Central Belt, just the areas are smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So you still have poor people living in poor areas, and in some respects it's worse, because the distance between the haves and have-nots is really quite stark.
Mm.
Before I moved up here to work, I worked in Hamilton. And the first thing that I kind of noticed when I moved up here was the fancy cars that everybody drove. They were new, new shiny cars. So wealth was very visible. And therefore, if you weren't part of that, then you've probably felt worse. Mm. You know, you weren't same circumstances as other people in other parts of Scotland, but it maybe felt worse. So there were still those areas of multiple deprivation. There had been work that had gone on for a number of years through the urban programme, the Great Northern Partnership, which was a kind of archipelago, depending on the policies of Scottish Government or the Scottish Office. So those were, I guess, the same kind of drivers, albeit in a different scale.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was also, people were drawn into Aberdeen. So there was, I think, because of the prospect of work, Aberdeen tended to be to draw people in. So there was people here who were not in good circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So the contributing factors were much the same, albeit in a much more affluent general economy.
Mm.
But if you're poor in that economy, then maybe you feel it more.
Yeah, yeah, certainly a greater sense of inequality.
Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is shocking, despite the fact that there had been, despite the wealth, we hadn't made any inroads into that.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of still haven't, you know. Those areas are still areas of multiple deprivation.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't cracked that one at all. And what we were attempting to do through the FOIA initiative was, I guess, to offer some kind of route out of that. And that was very much linked to education, training and work. Albeit within the FOIA movement, that focused on homelessness and the risk of homelessness, so there was a bed in there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So trying to link, you know, all these factors together rather than just addressing one at a time.
Yeah. And that was the experience of young people. So they felt they went from pillar to post. Mm-hmm. So they had a housing issue. They were also unemployed. They were in poor health. They maybe had an addiction issue. So there was no one place they could go to help address
mm-hmm.
the whole person. It was all in slices. So their experience was they went from pillar to post and it didn't resolve their issues.
Mm-hmm.
So our attempt to do that through a kind of single door. Hence the construction of the organisation, having the buy-in from the key public bodies,
mm-hmm.
having the buy-in from business, because at the end of the day that's who you want to employ
mm-hmm.
people. So that was the kind of driver behind what was set up.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that there had been some kind of community business activity in Grampian
yep.
previously. Were you part of those kind of initiatives?
The social strategy unit was the sponsoring department or part of the sponsoring department, and a lot of them were part funded by Urban Aid,
mm-hmm.
so we had a link with a lot of them. So I had some involvement with some of those,
mm-hmm.
And some still exist.
Okay, which, yeah. Do you know which one?
Seton Nursery, Community Nursery,
mm-hmm.
still there. I think other things fell by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
There was also other initiatives like Credit Union,
mm-hmm.
So again, there's still St Macar Credit Union, it's continued.
Okay. And of those that fell by the wayside, what kinds of things were they addressing? Do you remember?
I'm trying to recall. I think there was an attempt to do a laundry. I guess they just never got the business model right. There was a tea room, or tea rooms, various tea rooms. I'm not sure if they continued or not.
Mm-hmm.
That tended to be in the rural area.
Okay.
Dave Simmers, is he on your list of... Yeah, Dave would tell you a bit more history of the community
mm-hmm.
business ventures.
Mm-hmm.
And
what do you think the movement got wrong in its business model?
I think they probably weren't businesses. They were trying to do social things. So the business model didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so was that something that you tried to address when you were putting FOIA together?
Well, I think the fact that we were not... We said that we would set up businesses, commercial businesses, and that's what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
Some have were very successful and then weren't. Some continue to be successful. But they were set up on a commercial basis. So weren't dependent on subsidy on an ongoing basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be the experience of a number of community businesses that didn't survive, is that they were over-dependent on subsidy.
Mm-hmm. And so what were the business areas that you went into when you started Voyee?
There was a notion in the business plan that we should do various businesses and that we had a space to do various businesses. So in one of the two buildings that we initially took on, the refurbishment of Trinity Church included on the ground floor space for some kind of businesses, but it didn't determine what the businesses were. There was notions of doing a cafe, there was notions of doing other things. So I reasonably quickly came to the conclusion we should do one and do it really well, and picked on us doing a restaurant. So we set about the detailed business planning to establish a fairly large scale restaurant in the city centre. So 90 covers, and that opened in 99. So the period prior to that had really been about establishing the housing side of things and some of the education and training opportunities and the kind of links to employment. And so two businesses were established in 99, if I remember rightly. The first was more fortuitous and opportunistic, and that was a graphic design business. So Foy Graphics was established. There was no great plan around that. That was actually just responding to an individual's aspiration to work with us, our need to have good graphics, and the individual prepared to take a risk and build up a business. So that's what happened, and it grew. It still continues to be a good going wee business. It's never going to be a massive big PR company, but it's in terms of doing a great graphic design business, it's done very well, and continues to do so. The restaurant was a different kettle of fish, so that had to be done on a sound commercial basis because it was a major financial risk for the organisation. So you're probably talking a turnover in excess of £1 million. So it was at the time new for Aberdeen, so it was very kind of modern, bright colours. It served also as a gallery space. So what you might expect nowadays of a good restaurant. So we did that in the late 90s. And it was profitable for quite a number of years. And then the market began to change in Aberdeen. So we did various things. We kind of branched out and ran another restaurant under a contract with His Majesty's Theatre. So we ran Foy at HMT. But in essence, that kind of just split our customer base. Mm-hmm. And then we also went into other catering. So we did a site canteen, we did a works canteen. So we were just trying to diversify a bit. But it wasn't working. Commercially, it wasn't working. We weren't making money. So we got to the point where we were just losing money. And it's just, it wasn't our core business. So we eventually had to take the difficult decision to close the restaurant. Mm-hmm. So that's, and we probably should have done it 2 years before we actually closed it. But there was a great affection for the Foy restaurant, mm-hmm. and the board were not minded to take my recommendation, which was to close it. Mm-hmm. So
and over the years, did young people from the other areas of Foy, did they get work experience?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
In these two businesses.
I mean, and other businesses. So. I mean, the way that the restaurant was set up, it required a staff team that weren't our clients, as it were. So we got it established, but then we were able to put people in and work experience. Some people eventually got jobs, but it was done on merit, so it wasn't done on the basis that they were part of a social enterprise. It was done on the basis that they needed a job filled and somebody could fill it.
Mm-hmm.
But there was always that commitment, I guess, to work experience and training using the restaurant. So, I mean, that worked effectively, I think. I think we got the balance of that right.
Mm-hmm.
We did another one, not a restaurant, it was a Ben & Jerry's Super Scoop, no, Partner Shop, they called it, I think. So it was a franchise from Ben & Jerry's, and it was run on the same expectations as any franchise, in terms of quality and service. But they would waive some of their franchise fees on the basis that you were employing people who were unemployed.
Mm.
And so we took a space at the Bon Accord Centre that cost quite a lot of money. The service charges quite a lot of money. And we opened in November, and you have to sell a lot of ice cream in the middle of the winter. But we ran it successfully for a number of years. We got kind of sponsorship from a number of companies, but it was dependent on this subsidy, to be honest. And it was clear it was never going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So it so happened that Union Square was being developed, and the Bon Accord Centre knew it had to refurbish,
mm-hmm.
To compete. So it needed the space that we were in. So they offered us a sum of money to leave, and I said no. They offered us a bigger sum of money, I said no. They offered us an even bigger sum of money, I said no. So eventually they just bought the whole lease out. So actually we ended that venture in profit. Just by holding on. So I guess, you know, there was some key commercial decisions that drove the organisation, and that continues to this day. You know, there are business ventures that the FOI is involved in that have seen a downturn through the oil and gas sector. So, Roadwise Driver Training, FOI bought that as a business, and it did a lot of commercial work, but that got hit with a downturn in terms of training activities. So they're slowly building that back up.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the FOI had to face a number of commercial decisions.
Mm-hmm. And how has the landscape for the other part of the work of FOI developed in terms of, you know, addressing homelessness and, you know, providing a safe space for...
Well, it grew like Topsy. So initially we allowed for 20 places in accommodation in Aberdeen, and for that 20 we had 200 applications. A third of them were from Aberdeenshire, from Outwith, Aberdeen. So that kind of spurred us on to be much more pushy in terms of expanding the model, as it were, and growing it in both Aberdeen and in Aberdeenshire, and that was welcomed. You know, I guess at our peak, when the kind of service model was going great guns, when we had developed quite a significant education training portfolio through the likes of the New Deal activities, and all the commercial activities were working well. You were probably looking at an organisation with about 4.5 million turnover, and 150 employees. So at one point everything was in balance. But in terms of the kind of social side of the business, I mean, that changed significantly in terms of the policy framework. So the advent of Scottish Parliament, good thing. but the whole thrust towards outsourcing and contracting made things much more competitive. We're a relatively small player in a big scheme of things, and that continues to this day. So initially, we secured contracts in our own right when they were procuring through DWP at a local level, local being Aberdeen. So we had good relationships with the local staff, and that developed into, you know, contractual opportunities for us. When that went up to a kind of larger scale, or even larger scale, or then we became subcontractors. So that kind of acts against the social enterprise model, really. That big is beautiful because you can cut your costs, and it just becomes a race to the bottom. So, and I think that's probably still to this day the case, that the contracting arrangements for public authorities, public bodies, don't really favour the smaller organisations.
But we
were able to build it up successfully through, I guess, good relationships with partner organisations and delivering what they wanted. That was the other thing. So a real focus on service. So we were prepared to go, you know, do the extra, you know, to make things work effectively. So, and I think you would still see that in the organisation. So there's a passion and commitment across the workforce in terms of delivering something to the best of our ability. So the whole quality thing was really important.
And do you think, you know, do other providers work on a similar basis to FOIA, that you address not just housing but education and skills?
They don't procure services in that way. So it's only a FOIA because we make it a FOIA. We try and join up. So public bodies are notoriously bad at joining up service contracts. So they do not look at the whole person. They simply look at drug addiction or mental health or homelessness or unemployment. So the siloing of things, it gets worse as you go up through government. So, you know, if you look at Scottish Government and it's how it's departmentalised, it gets easier as you get down to local authority level, but it's still in little bits, you know. And they don't commission across those different bits. And goodness me, they don't commission between different bodies, all the way in the public sector. So, you know, that kind of vision of third sector organisations having a key role in public service activity is stifled because of that procurement. I think it's a lot better than it was, because it's a regime we have to. It won't go away.
You mentioned that as well as working in Aberdeen City, you also had started to work out in the Shire.
Yeah.
What kind of different types of needs were you? Was there any difference in need there, or what drove where you set up in the Shire?
Partly opportunistic. No, not partly, very opportunistic, and that was probably just due to you know, some well-targeted conversations with senior officials within the council. But it got us a foot in the door, really. And being able to prize in some money to make things happen, rather than just wait to be commissioned. So we were pretty adept at match funding things, and you know, that was the sweetener, I guess, for folk getting on board with us. So being able to join things up in a way that made sense and made it cost effective. But I guess generally we were drawn to those areas where there was long-standing multiple deprivation, so Fraserburgh, Peterhead, but we also, the ambition was to have some kind of foyer facility in every location or area across Aberdeenshire. So administratively, Aberdeenshire Council split into six areas, and the intention had been to try and have something in all of them. So we got as far as having four facilities, but that's kind of been curtailed a bit now.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's just contracting arrangements.
Mm-hmm.
So partly opportunistic, partly rationale and need.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of presenting difficulties, in terms of the young folk, in some respects, there was less choice in Aberdeenshire. So I think maybe some of the young people that we ended up with were because there was nothing else. So we'd always envisaged for our accommodation that it would be low to medium needs rather than high needs. We've got a lot of high needs kids. And that's just because there was few alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of some of the other service areas, it was kind of much the same in terms of unemployed type services. Probably less focused on just young people. And because we had a facility for learning, opening that up to the wider community. So maybe the community connections became more important,
mm-hmm.
Rather than being more narrowly defined by age group.
Mm-hmm. Was there, some of the, community business models were very much based on that community development and understanding the community as a kind of a geographic, in a geographic way rather than a community of interest.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say, what kind of relationship does FOI build up with the community? Does it have a kind of community development ethos, or is it about addressing?
I think that's been more apparent in Aberdeenshire, and the particularly in North Aberdeenshire, Peterhead, Fraserburgh, Banff, Macduff to some extent, but probably Peterhead and Fraserburgh in the main. So there was more of a community focus and a kind of community development approach rather than more a kind of age group approach or issue approach.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and I think it was easier to do that, and more of an expectation to do that actually. So yeah, more of a kind of place based,
mm-hmm.
as you'd say now.
And was that growing out of any kind of tradition of community action in those areas, do you think?
Yeah, I think so, yeah, absolutely. An expectation that's how you do your business.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, both Fraserburgh and Peterhead were FOI established and continues to have a range of different service activities. They've got strong community voice. And expectations. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. And does that voice come from kind of tenants associations, or what kind of groups are visible?
There would be other third sector organisations. There would be, in Fraserburgh you've got a development trust. Organisations with a kind of long standing foothold in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess a long standing tradition of volunteering. In those communities, around arts, around children's activities, youth activities. So a lot to build on, really.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a great strength of those communities.
Mm-hmm.
And probably built up through the traditional industries that are there.
Mm-hmm. So the kind of fishing communities and...
Yeah, I think close links with the fishing community is really important.
Mm-hmm. And so... does that not really translate into the kind of city context of Aberdeen? Do you not see that same visibility of community action? Or
I guess when we were looking at establishing the FOA, we probably went, we're safe and went for a more neutral territory in terms of city centre mm-hmm.
locations.
And part of that was so that people could escape their own neighbourhood mm. Or didn't want to go back into the neighbourhood. So it was, I guess it's more difficult in that larger city context. Maybe you're just it's a wee bit more neutral in the city centre.
Mm-hmm.
And you could also do something a bit bigger scale
mm-hmm.
In terms of the buildings.
Mm-hmm. I'm quite interested in the kind of how devolution and subsequent policy around social enterprise has kind of affected the development of the third sector in Scotland. Did you see a decisive impact, you know, following devolution on the kind of work you were
hmm.
doing?
I mean, we became, and I personally became involved in a lot of discussions and working groups and what have you that Scottish Government set up around homelessness. I chaired a group around supported accommodation that I think is still kind of influencing some of the thinking around supported accommodation for young people. So there's quite a lot of activity around homelessness. There was most certainly a lot of activity around a kind of education, training and employment agenda. In the days of New Deal, Scotland had the kind of pre-New Deal, what was it called? Donald Dewar launched it. There's a separate Scottish fund.
Mm-hmm.
The name escapes me. But we were involved in that and did some interesting work that continues to this day around training opportunities for people with addiction issues. And we managed to mainstream it as part of the wider drug and alcohol strategies, and the college continues to part fund it.
Mm.
I think we needed to be on the front foot on a lot of policy areas. So that was certainly an area that we were very involved in. I sat on the Gateway. What was it, Gateway? One of the advisory groups around New Deal as well, the Scottish Government set up. So there was a lot of, and that was in part about getting known, but also helping shape thinking in terms of making sure the North East was represented and the thinking, and it wasn't just driven by Central Belt thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And do you feel like you were listened
mm-hmm.
to in that process?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had something to provide, and I think we became known, made sure our local MPs and MSPs knew what we did, how we did it. So we were, in many respects still are, I think, a regular stopping point. Summer vacations, make sure that your politicians know what you're up to.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that on a regular basis, making sure senior officers, when they came to the local authority, invite them on a visit, just say, here's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So again, a lot of it was around kind of personal contact and just building up our profile, just positioning the organisation in such a way that it was known.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned right at the beginning that you didn't necessarily begin FOA with the notion of, I want to set up a social enterprise, but when did that, you know, term social enterprise become kind of currency within your organisation?
probably early on, actually. So I always liked it as a term. It was helpful in describing us. I mean, the social bit, in terms of that impact that we wanted to have. But whether you use the term enterprise or business, I think in terms of who we wanted to appeal to, in terms of employers, I think that was helpful to mm-hmm. have that tag. Mm-hmm. It implied, well, I always used to say that this isn't a something for nothing organisation. We're paid to deliver services. So there was a deal between us and the funder. There was a deal between us and the client. So there was expectations on both sides. So I think that was a useful term. Mm. I think people got confused. I think people talked about social enterprise in just the business, but actually that's not the case. So the FOI is the social enterprise. It has commercial activities, but it's the whole thing that is the social enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
Often people think it's just the business bit,
mm-hmm.
But that's not how I would view it.
Mm-hmm.
I did an article for the Chamber of Commerce to try and say that. I think it was our 21st year. That's probably still around somewhere, if that's helpful to have that.
Definitely. And so I'm thinking in terms of the development of social enterprise in Scotland, FOI is probably one of the first organisations to really position themselves as a social enterprise within the landscape, and you must have witnessed a lot of people joining that sector since the late 1990s. Do you see it as something that is growing, or has it reached a ceiling? How do you see that development?
I think others are making that link between social and economic goals. So ethical business, still a business, mm-hmm. but they're trying to do things ethically. I think the philosophy is still evolving. I think that's still growing. If you go back to, I guess, what I would see as some of the early attempts around social enterprise were done at an individual basis. So it was your big issue seller on the street. So there was 50 pence or a pound, but there was an exchange going on. Now it's embraced in a whole number of organisations and the way that they do business and how they describe themselves.
Mm-hmm.
As distinct from a charity. I think there's a difference in how things are perceived between a charity, which FOI is, and a social enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a mindset difference, I think.
And have you ever come across any tensions in with the more kind of voluntary sector or the public sector in Grampian? I've come across various organisations, some of which have had really great relationships with the council and with other kind of voluntary organisations, and some have had being viewed with suspicion because of this kind of enterprise aspect to their work.
Early on, FOI was probably viewed in those terms. And I think partly because we were seen to be stealing their money.
Mm-hmm.
So, which may well have been the case, but I think we were viewed in that way. Nowadays, I think it's probably I mean, I think there are different camps around social enterprise now in relation to a more community-based approach as opposed to a kind of broader philosophy. I would tend not to try and limit it. You know, I think both are equally valid, you know. But yeah, that's the kind of tension I think there is now at a sector level. Yeah, I mean, we've been lucky in respect that we've had a supportive government. So again, I think Scotland's done well in relation to social enterprise. We've had some strong voices advocating for it within government. So yeah, I think that's been helpful.
And you know, as well as devolution in the late 1990s, we also had the restructuring of local authorities from the kind of regional district model into a unitary local authority. How did that affect kind of relationships you had with people and different?
Well, it kind of stymied things, to be honest, for a while, and there was a lot of risk around that. So, I mean, 96 was when the new unitary authorities kicked in. They probably took a couple of years to kind of get their bearings, but we had very difficult initial period in terms of our relationships with local authorities, and it was partly where we'd come from. So, you know, who owned us now? You know, who was the kind of sponsoring? Because there was still monies going in from the council. We also became a bit of an easy target for budget cuts. So, 1 year, our whole education grant was cut. So, yeah, we were an easy target. It made things, in one respect, easier, because there was only one body that you were dealing with. But it was still divided into departments with powerful heads of service or directors. So you still had to be known across the council. I mean, what we did secure pretty early on was good political support. So making sure that was cross-party, making sure that wasn't just the administration. So just keeping those relationships going. I'm not a fan of the small local authorities. Having worked for a larger local authority, I think that's the way they should have gone. So if there was ever a move to go back to larger scale authorities, I would be a supporter. I think you get things of scale. And I think that's helpful in terms of the governance arrangements for councillors, in terms of focus on strategy rather than on, you know, nitty gritty stuff. So I can't see that happening anytime soon. I think the other thing is a closeness to Parliament. So on various occasions we've been able to present evidence, you know, when committees were calling for particular evidence around things, and I guess that's been helpful around our kind of subject areas, in terms of homelessness, and but also just in terms of social enterprise, the fact that it was on the agenda for a committee to consider. So I presented at one of the committees around that.
And so what personally drove you to make that move from a kind of public sector role into the third sector?
So I was a level within the local authority that my job was disappearing. So I was having to apply for jobs across Scotland, basically, in the local authority. So the job was coming up, so I applied for it, but I also applied for other jobs as well. On the morning that I was being interviewed. I was going to be interviewed for two jobs. The morning was the FOI, in the afternoon it was the head of community development in Aberdeenshire. I had the interview in the morning, I was offered the job and withdrew from the other one, which is probably the best decision I made. So,
so you don't regret making that transition?
No, absolutely no. I mean, it was amazing job, you know, to start kind of with nothing and create this organisation that was doing so much. Fantastic. And have, I mean, what I was able to gather around me was some fantastic talent in terms of, you know, making it happen. So, you know, I could be the hunter-gatherer kind of thing, but it needed folk back at the ranch to make it actually work. So I was lucky in that respect, in terms of colleagues that were equally as passionate about it as me. So, and I still see it as operating in public service. So it's a kind of old-fashioned term, but that's kind of what that would be. That would go back to my roots in terms of my upbringing, in terms of where I've ended up. So I didn't really lose that. I think I just got more effective at it.
And where, if you had not taken the FOI job and you'd went for that other interview in the afternoon, what do you think your role would have been in that job? You know, where would you have had to try to work and develop?
Well, I'd presented a proposal to the shadow director of education that the role should be primarily one of community development, and therefore should sit more with the chief executive department and the area management structure that they were putting in place. So it was about engagement of communities rather than a adult education service. So it was the community development bit that I was interested in. So I might have had more clout if that had happened. I would have split it up to put the resource alongside the area committees, strengthen that side.
And has things like that happened? How has community development gone within the local community?
Well, I mean, it was the community education service. In this area, it's been devastated. You know, those budgets have just been raided and cut and slashed. So I have little or no sense of what was on in the city. I've got some sense of it in the Shire. But in terms of what I joined in the 80s with the Grampian Regional Council, it's very different beast now. I think some of the policies of the local authorities now are less compartmentalised, so that some of the stuff around that we were doing within the social strategy unit is more broader based. So, and community development approach through the community planning process, you know, I think is much more embedded in that respect.
And one thing we haven't touched on so much is the role of the private sector in kind of the FOI journey. You did mention, I think, early on that you had to have some buy-in from businesses in the area. Were they easy to engage and to bring on board, or did they have, you know, scepticisms from a different angle than
Well, there was some early work done through the Chamber of Commerce in terms of engaging with business in the business planning process, which was helpful, but in terms of raising expectations with business was probably too soon, because it was years after that things started to actually happen. The trust that I inherited was enormous. It was like a council committee. Mm. So it had 21 plus folk on it. That wasn't an effective way to run the organisation. So that might have been helpful in terms of establishing a partnership and getting everybody kind of pointing in the same direction. But in terms of running an organisation, that wasn't the best way of doing it. So I set about, I guess, reconstructing the board in a way that wouldn't make people unhappy, because they would lose a place. So carefully choosing my time as to when we would downsize, so at local government elections, so that nobody felt they were losing out. It went down probably half to the size. Because of charitable law, I shifted the public bodies that used to appoint, so the right to appoint, I shifted that as to an invite to appoint, so that they weren't. So we kind of shifted the membership of the organisation. So the members of the organisation were the local authorities, were the health board, the career service, and we changed the nature so that the directors that were appointed were also the members. That took some time to do, but I kind of had a plan as to how I would do that. So that maybe took 10 years to actually implement. But part of that was also about making sure that we had business involved. So I kind of signalled that when we opened the Marywell Centre, and I wanted there to be a business representative who spoke at the formal opening of the that. So my then chair, who was a prominent Labour councillor, I explained to her what I wanted, and she came up with a bloke called David Patton, who she'd stood against. He was a Tory candidate in a by-election, or an MP election, I think. Anyway, I approached David and spent an afternoon with him, telling him what we did, and he agreed to speak at the opening from a business viewpoint, and also then agreed to come on to the board. So he was the first, and I think because I got somebody of his stature, that helped get a message out to the business community about our seriousness about engaging with business. So it kind of continued. So the restructuring of the board and making sure that we had a good representation from the business sector, and that continues to this day. And that might be, that's partly about doing skills audits in terms of what you need around the board table, and opening it up to nominations, applications. So a more open and transparent process as well. The other thing is that we had a separate board for the business activities, and essentially they were all business representatives, because that's the head, that's the kind of business we wanted, those heads around the board table. But it's funny because they were the ones that didn't bite the bullet in terms of closing the restaurant when I thought they should. I think it's been it was about having the right skills around the table.
So that engagement seems to have come about quite naturally and productively.
The other thing that I did, and I guess there weren't many folk that were doing it at the time, is that I was very actively involved in events that the Chamber of Commerce were running. I joined Scottish Council for Development and Industry. So I was rubbing shoulders with senior business leaders through those activities. So I got known. I would also, I did the round of Rotary clubs, Probus clubs, WRI, just whatever, to kind of promote the message. If a lot of the kind of Rotary clubs and things are predominantly from a business background. So I was eager to engaged with business.
Mm. And what about a kind of social enterprise network in the Northeast? Has that been something you feel you've been part of, or?
Not really, no.
Mm.
I didn't. Probably not for publishing, but I mean the fact that they put it in the with the kind of third sector interfaces, as they're called. I think that was the wrong thing to do.
Mm.
I think, you know, that kind of one size fits all isn't really the right way, right approach. So I tended to use my network at a national level.
Mm.
So built up a good rapport with Kibble, albeit it's a different scale, but I mean a good rapport, and you know, got on well, still do, with Graham Bell. I got involved with Senscot, so again, just there was opportunities for rubbing shoulders with folk through Senscot.
Mm.
There was a Social Enterprise Academy, so I'm still a director on the board there. I have indicated I'll step down, because I'm no longer actively involved in the sector. I think they should get some fresh eyes. So yeah, I think a national level has been helpful. But I guess in the Northeast it's been more informal. So there's most recent, the past couple of years, there's been a group of chief execs of different local, not just social enterprises, but they've got that kind of same philosophy. So they've been meeting informally. I got involved in other things as well, of a social enterprise. So I was founding director of Transition Extreme, and chaired that for a while. I did chair Aberdeen Council of Voluntary Organisations for a while, so I did have fingers and pies.
Sounds very busy.
Yeah. I didn't do it all at once. But yeah, I was busy. Yeah, I was busy.
Okay. And you retired from Foyer.
Yeah.
Last year,
yeah.
And what was your sense of how you left the organisation? Is it, you know, just reflecting on where you'd got to versus where you started? Was where you left the organisation where you thought you'd end up when you started?
No, not at all. I mean, I guess I didn't have a scooby about where we were going to end up in terms of, you know, the business plan was implemented within 3 years, and I guess that was the vision that you had. So it was a relatively small project, really, rather than what it became. The last few years of work were, I found, challenging because of this treadmill of funding. I felt I've just been here before. I've just been oh, not again. So I left the organisation intact, in a better place than it had been in the previous year. There was some opportunities that were emerging that were exciting. So opportunities for a new chief exec to get their teeth into. The world was changing, and I thought this is a good time to step back. So the policy agenda was significantly changing around homelessness. The stuff around employment and training seems to change every couple of years. I mean, still lots of opportunities. But yeah, I was personally ready just to step back.
Mm-hmm.
I did it at a point where it was, we'd steadied the ship, as it were. We'd had to make some difficult decisions over the past few years. I'd kind of restructured or helped point in the direction of our restructure,
mm-hmm.
which has been seen through. So, yeah, no regrets.
Mm-hmm. I don't have any more questions, Ken, but is there anything you think I've missed along the way that you'd like to comment on?
I suppose one of the important things for me personally was an international experience.
Mm.
So through CEIS, there was 20 of us did a trip in 1999 to the States. So that was the first of these trips that Jerry organised. Mm. So there was folk on that from government, from funder organisations, from social enterprise, from Scottish government, and that was good to be part of that, and to see what they had done in LA and San Francisco. So the Ben and Jerry's stuff was something that I kind of brought back. Though we had been interested in it before. And my then deputy Adele, she got involved. She's on your list, isn't she, Adele Harris?
Mm.
Yeah. So it's EDEL. So she's the CEO at Cornerstone. The other person I don't know if I'd put on the list is my successor, Leona
mm-hmm.
McDermott. I think you should see Leona. She'll tell you the truth about what I left.
Brilliant. So you're happy, Ken, I'll stop the recording there.